Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very accomplished entrepreneur from the UK, a fellow member of the YPO, Sukhi Sandhu, OBE. Sukhi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ash. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Sukhi is the founder and chief executive officer of Orderless and Involve. He's a Stonewall ambassador and launched the Sukhi Sandhu LGBTQI Asia Fund to support activism in Asia. And as I mentioned, he's a member of the YPO. So Sukhi, tell me about your amazing journey and what inspired you to become a champion for diversity and inclusion in the workplace.
So I personally tick many different boxes myself. So I'm Indian, I'm gay, I'm Sikh, I'm working class, I'm a middle child, I'm Scorpio. There are so many different layers to my identity. I'm married to like a white Catholic German guy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm just surrounded by diversity.
Amazing.
And so for me, I'm really empathetic to other people's struggles, right? Because mm-hmm. I know what it's like, for instance, to be in the closet. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to be the only brown person in the room. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to feel discriminated against, right? Mm-hmm. And actually have prejudice against you.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to make sure that I know that I can play my part, for instance, in the workplace and try and make sure that we build companies that are more inclusive, but also drive representation faster at the top of businesses, because the pace of change is so slow that I don't think we have that time to wait, quite frankly. Like there was a study recently in the UK that it would take something like 64 years to get 50% women CEOs in the FTSE 100 at the current rate.
Wow.
I probably won't even be around in 64 years. Or maybe I will with technology. You know, we're going to live forever. Yeah. But, you know, that's a long time to wait. Mm. And I think, like, my sister, my sister-in-law, my nieces, I want to try and create a better world for them when they get into the workplace, for instance, particularly my nieces, right? So that's why I really drive it and tackle it, because I genuinely love what I do.
Wow. What a great response. Thank you. So, Sukhi, now let's talk about your two businesses, Orderless and Involve. Tell me about the mission and impact of Orderless in promoting diversity in senior leadership teams.
Yeah, I mean, we're all about trying to change the world one senior leader at a time, right? And for us, it's about driving representation, usually across gender, race, and LGBT plus. Mm-hmm. And we've been doing it for the last 12 and a half years and really successfully. So last year, 85% of our appointments were diverse. Mm-hmm. Over 60% were women, and over 40% were people of color or racially diverse, and over 13% were LGBT plus. Mm-hmm. So we truly are changing the face of business, and we're really proud of that. And these are also appointments, Ash. This isn't long list or short list. Yeah. These are candidates who are winning the seat and actually in the role. So for us, it's about widening the gate, not lowering the bar when it comes to talent, because we want to make sure that companies are doing their best to look at a broader range of talent for those really influential leadership roles that exist in leadership teams and boardrooms. And that's kind of what drives us.
Fascinating. And Sukhi, how do you see the business case for diversity in evolving in recent years, especially in the light of the events of 2020 and thereafter?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely changed in the last few years, for sure, particularly things like the Black Lives Matter protests of the summer of 2020, which is over 3 years ago. That was almost a huge shift in the focus for companies when it came to diversity, specifically around Black representation and race. Mm-hmm. I would say over the last decade or 15 years, gender has been the priority for a lot of companies, and quite rightly, because gender still isn't fixed. It still needs to, like, we can't be complacent about representation there either. But the focus has been women, right? And that's probably distracted from other demographics maybe having the same kind of support.
Right.
And what BLM did is it kind of lit a fire under, I'm not going to swear, under the, you know, of each company to try and like take action in this scenario. And also because their people were asking for it. So whether we've actually made that progress in the last few years for Black representation is debatable, because it's still woeful, the representation. But BLM did have an impact to get companies to think, have that really uncomfortable conversation about race in business, particularly in the Western world. Right. I'm talking about the UK and US and Western Europe, where the majority of the positions of power are held by white people and white men. Right. So we need to make sure that that companies are looking at a broader range of talent, and actually even things like the Me Too movement, where it's kind of created more nervousness in companies around the gender movement. I mean, you had some senior politicians saying, you know, they didn't want to be in a room on their own with a woman for fear of kind of like a lawsuit on their case, right? That's not that, I think that is actually not helping women, because that's maybe not giving them the opportunities, because men are now frightened to spend time with them, which is bonkers. Like, we should be thinking, how do we create an environment that women can thrive in the business, not men saying, actually, I don't want to have to have the conversation anymore. So I think it's kind of shifted to try and make sure that we're being as intersectional as possible. And intersectionality means that you're looking at different demographics and trying to support them in different ways, because what the Black community need, what the Indian community need, or what women or LGBT plus need is going to be very different. So this is why diversity and inclusion is so challenging. There isn't a silver bullet to solve all the problems. It has to be a layered approach to try and make sure that you're having impact.
Well said. And what, in your opinion, are the strategies that you have found to be effective in encouraging more businesses to prioritize diversity and inclusion? It's being talked about all the time.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, it's, we always start with data in Involve and Audalis. So we have this tool called Radar, which is a diagnostic tool to take a measure of a company's recruitment, attraction, development, accountability, and resources, and their HR processes and policies, hence Radar. And we do that through doing digital surveys, doing focus groups, trying to get the qualitative data as well, reviewing any data that they have on their employee engagement surveys as well. And so we get a real rich picture of what the issues are in a business, because you can't, how do you solve for an issue if you don't know what they are?
Right.
So, and actually what we do, and having a third party like Involve do this diagnostic is really important, right? Because we're an independent objective company. We're not part, we don't work for the client we're working with, we're an advisor. So if you got HR to do it, for instance, in the company, your employees probably aren't going to be as honest as they might be with a third party like us.
Right.
And so we get really rich data. It's like holding a mirror up to an organization to take a measure of how inclusive a business is. So I think always starting with data, because then you can really unpick, like, well, what are the issues and challenges? And what we found over the radars we've done across multiple companies and geographies, actually age is a big issue in a lot of these companies, not like race or gender, but age. So there's a big focus on Gen Z, but what about like the older baby boomers that are in business that aren't getting any development and they're working longer? I like, because they're having to live longer and work longer to survive. So it really is a telling thing when you get the data to understand what the issues are, you can then start trying to create interventions to solve them. So that's a pretty key thing. The other strategy that's really, really important is accountability. Right. So saying you want to be diverse and inclusive is one thing, but how are you going to do it and how are you going to hold yourselves accountable? So we've seen it work really well in companies is when the CEO has kind of made a statement, we want to have, for instance, actually an example would be LVMH, the luxury conglomerate, right? Luxury conglomerate. They've set really bold targets for Black and race representation in their leadership levels, right? They've communicated it externally. They've communicated it internally. Everyone knows about it. So they are making sure they're holding themselves accountable. So they then create the interventions to drive that, which could be through hiring talent externally, creating talent development programs to accelerate the talent they have at the moment. But they're trying to do things to make sure that it adds to their goal of driving representation. So that kind of accountability is really important. Otherwise, it doesn't really mean anything. Saying that you want to be diverse and inclusive, great, but what are you doing? What are you trying to achieve? If you want to get more women in the board, say you want to get more women and say what target you want to set, and then go ahead and try and achieve it. Or companies will also try and link compensation or reward to diversity and inclusion goals for leadership team. Right? So that's a really good strategy, because you might find some leaders may not take action in the first year, but then when they see their bonus impacted, then they are going to take action the following year, because they don't want to get underpaid.
Yeah.
So there are tools that you can use to try and drive it. And that's some of the strategies we've seen that work.
Amazing. And what are some of the key challenges that you've encountered while promoting diversity and inclusion when you talk of executive search and talent acquisition?
Yeah, one of the biggest things that I find really annoying in what we do is you can imagine a lot of our clients, right? We work with a lot of chairmen and CEOs of businesses, right? Yeah. And they are all largely older, supposedly straight white men, is what I would say. Okay. And so when they talk to us and they say, oh, well, you know, Suki and Ordelis, we want to hire the best person for the job. And I'm like, so do we. We just want you to have more people to choose from. That's all we're asking, right? We'll find you all the straight white guys as well. We'll find you those in our search process, but we're going to present to you candidates that are also diverse that we've uncovered through our strategies we use to make sure, as I said earlier, to widen the gate, not lowering the bar, and making sure that we're leveling the playing field so everyone has a fair chance to get the job. So that misconception we have that if you do diversity-focused hiring, it means you're compromising on quality makes me mad. Absolutely. Or very cross, as you might say in Britain.
And you're so right. And you're so
it makes me so cross because I'm like, that's not true. Like the talent is, so there's always that message, you know, the talent isn't out there. I said, yes, it is. You're not untapping it. Correct. And if you think about it historically, diverse communities have been treated pretty badly because a lot of the senior hiring is managed by executive search firms, right? So historically, the larger firms haven't maybe had the best candidate experience or focused on those communities. So they haven't even been included or considered or entertained with the idea of these opportunities and treated badly. So they haven't even been given the opportunity to get a chance to go forward. So that's changed a lot in the last few years because the society and clients have demanded it, not our industry, which makes me really sad. The reason I set up Ordelis 12 and a half years ago is to elevate the role of what executive search is in business. It is such an important function because you're nothing without talent.
Yeah, amazing.
You can have a business and a product, but if you haven't got talent in the business to sell the product, create the product, go to market, like, what's the point?
Correct.
So for me, it's about trying to elevate the reputation of our industry. And I feel like I'm doing pretty well so far.
Oh, I'm sure. So. I've been reading about you and you are doing some amazing things, you know. So, let's talk about Involve. And Involve is spelled with a capital IN. Involve is a global network championing diversity and inclusion. Could you explain the core initiatives and programs that you offer to organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. So Involve, we're effectively a diversity and inclusion consultancy. So we help businesses. So if Ordelis is about trying to help you accelerate representation of leaders through hiring, right, at a senior level, leadership team or boardroom, Involve is about trying to help you retain your talent at all levels, right? So we do things like learning and development across different topics like race inclusion, LGBT plus inclusion, cultural awareness, whatever you might need. We have a talent program for your future leaders, which is intersectional. So we can either do it cross company or we do it where the company will bring us in-house and say want to put cohorts of their leaders through a program, right? And that's all about trying to accelerate their development in the business. We have the diagnostic tool I mentioned called Radar to help you actually take a measure of how inclusive your business is. And it's only collecting data from your own company. And then one of the biggest things we do on the role model list, which I know we're going to talk about later on, where we publish the top 100 role models in gender, in race, in LGBT plus, in disability and neurodiversity. So it's the two companies are separate, but they work very closely together because you can imagine Ordelis clients need help with retaining talent at all levels, and Involve clients need help with changing representation at a senior level.
Well said. And as good a time as any to ask you about role model lists that are published by Involve. How do these lists contribute to promoting diversity in leadership?
Yeah, so I mean, the role model lists are really dear to me because that's how Involve started, right? Involve started as an LGBT plus list in the Financial Times. 10 years ago, actually, it's 10 years ago because it was 2013, right? So it's 10 years ago. And it was the first of its kind. And the reason I wanted to do this list called Outstanding was because I wanted to celebrate LGBT plus business executives. So there were other kind of role modelists that I'd seen in the press, but they were very focused on like people in politics, the arts, fashion, actors, that kind of thing. And who were great and fabulous, that was great. But we're more than, say, fashion and art. We are business leaders, right? So that's set up. So it's first of its kind. And it reached millions of people when it's published in the Financial Times. And that's kind of how it then started to then to do like a role model list for ethnic minorities. Because I was conscious that I'm not only gay, I'm also Indian, right? Being gay, I can hide, right? It's an invisible characteristic. But being brown, I can't hide my skin color when I walk in a room. You know that I'm racially diverse. You know that I might be Indian, right? So I was like, well, how can I also promote and support ethnic minority communities, hence Empower? And then I also wanted to be an ally to women, right? Because women also can't do it on their own. They need, all communities need to support each other. And so I wanted to also make sure that we're putting a spotlight on gender. And neurodiversity and disability gets hardly very much coverage or attention. And so we launched our Enable Role Model list at the start of this year. So the way in which these support diversity and inclusion in leadership is you can't be what you can't see, right? So for us, it's about inspiring the next generation of leaders that they can get there too, right? So if you think about LGBT plus being invisible, you have to come out for people to know that you're LGBT plus, right? So our role model list, we've got these incredible executives and future leaders that we feature each year, and people see them and they see that they're not alone, right? They see like, the CEO, the Europe CEO for YouTube is gay, right? The former CEO of Lloyd's of London was a bisexual woman. So we try and celebrate those individuals to show that we're normal, we exist and we're successful and we do really well and we should be treated just like everyone else.
Absolutely.
And so for us, it was about also challenging stereotypes of where people expect these diverse communities to be. And so also in answer to the question about, you know, talent doesn't exist and out there, well, actually we show you each year that it does. So you can see the ethnic minorities, you can see the LGBT plus, you can see the women. So they're kind of the main reasons why we did the role modeling to begin with. And I just love it. We do it 4 times a year. We do a reception to celebrate the launch of the role model. So the outstanding role modelists come out next on the 9th of November. So we're doing a reception launch with Deutsche Bank in New York, which I'm really excited about. And then we do 2 big galas, one in London and one in New York, in March and April to celebrate, to bring them together in person, which are fabulous.
How amazing. I hope I'm around in one of your galas and have the opportunity to
attend. Well, you'll be more than welcome to come along as my guest if you're in London.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Suki, my next question is that, while there's a lot of discussion about diversity and inclusion, how does one measure success of the initiatives that organizations are taking beyond just numbers and data?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, I mean, like, for instance, iRadar looks at both quantitative and qualitative data. And the qualitative data is probably even more important, because then that's when you get a really good picture of what's happening in a business through, say, focus groups or town halls, because then you get insights from what working at an organization is really like for employees. You start to understand their challenges, their fears, and their struggles. And this is from your own employees, right? So it's really important. I think it's also really important to being observant, right? Take a measurement of your organization when you're in the room, like who's speaking up, whether in meetings or informally, who shows up to voluntary events, how is the work actually working? Like, how are different people treated within the same job or function, right? These aren't like empirical measures, but you would assume that prominent voices within your company will become more diverse, so that diverse employees are more comfortable and open to attending voluntary events. So I think there is definitely more that you can do, which is outside of numbers and statistics when you look at qualitative data.
I have time for 2 more questions for you. My next question is, how do you see the future of work impacting diversity and inclusion, especially with the rise of remote and hybrid work models?
Yeah, really good question, Ash, because it's really topical given the pandemic with remote working. Yeah. On the whole, I think it's positive, right? I think generally it's positive. There was, and most companies are embracing remote working and flexibility, which I think is really important when you try and think about diversity and inclusion. And I think the pandemic completely changed everyone's perspective of what working was, right? So even me, right, pre-pandemic, we would probably allow people to work 1 day a week from home, right? Because I was very conscious of, we're a small business, I want to make sure that we've got engagement and culture and building it. And so going completely remote was really weird for me, mm-hmm. right? And then now we've continued that. We all work remotely and we have to work really hard to ensure that we do meetups physically each mm-hmm. month and make sure that we're continuing to drive values and behaviors that work for our business. But we're also seeing that there is a drive to get people back into the office, mm-hmm. right? We're seeing it both sides of the pond.
Yep.
And there was a report in the UK, I want to say 2 weeks ago, by KPMG, where they did a survey of CEOs about remote working. And I think something like 2/3 of them said that by 2025, everyone will be back in the office 5 days a week.
Okay.
Which for me, I feel is a little bit short-sighted mm-hmm. of like what's been happening. It's like, why have we not learned the lessons of what the value of hybrid working is, mm-hmm. right? Because companies are doing maybe 3 days a week in the office, right. I would say.
Yeah.
And it varies by depending on the company you talk to. Mm. So I think we need to be mindful of what companies want. So for instance, I know a tech company in the US, they tried to get people to come back in the office and half their workforce left. Right. Yeah. So your people will think with their feet.
Mm.
But even with remote hybrid working, you don't even have to leave your house to find a new job. It's all done virtually.
Mm.
So you've got to really think about your, it's a talent risk, right? About you losing your people and your good people. That's what I would say. Amazing. So, and we need to reframe the question rather than thinking about why you want to work from home.
Mm.
Why don't we ask why are we going into the office?
Correct.
Right. What's the purpose of being in the office? Because if you're going to go in the office and do Zoom calls all day, what's the point? You could do that at home.
Yep.
They'll be able to do more Zoom calls because they're not commuting in.
Mm.
They'll be more productive. So I think it's just trying to make sure we don't go into the old school traditional mindset and also be really conscious of things like when it comes to diversity and inclusion, like something called proximity bias,
mm-hmm.
right? And what that means is when there's a bias towards people that are going into the office because they're getting visibility with the leader, so they might get more projects, and the ones that are at home are being left behind.
Mm.
You've got to be really conscious of that. And if you think about it, diverse employees, particularly women, will probably be more hybrid focused because unfortunately, if they're parents as well, women do tend to do more of the responsibilities at home, not just work. So it's more flexible and more beneficial for them to be doing hybrid working. So if proximity bias becomes an issue, it means that women will start to get overlooked for promotion, which then creates this cycle of which is why we can't be complacent, about diversity and inclusion, because we need to always be mindful of things like that.
Very well said. Very well said. And my last question to you, Suki, and this one I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball. What are your hopes and aspirations for the future of diversity and inclusion in the workplace around the world?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've asked this loads of times before, and I always say that I'd like to be out of a job.
Okay.
I'd like to be in a position where you don't need a firm like Audalis or Involve to actually do diversity and inclusion, right? Because businesses are innately inclusive, that it becomes like, even like the diversity inclusion function may not even be needed because the business is owning it and they're doing it naturally in day to day. But we are so far from that. Because even if you think about politically the shift to the right in a lot of countries and the anti-woke, anti-DEI agenda happening everywhere in the world, the battle is far from over.
Yeah.
There is a lot to be fought in the world. So I worry that I'm probably going to be gainfully employed for the next 10 years, although I'm not sure I can last another 10 years because it's hard work trying to change the world, Ash. It's a tough job. I might look young. This filter might make me look young, but I feel very old.
Well, I think
I love what I do. I mean, they say, when you love doing something, when you do something that you love, you'll never work a day in your life. So that's kind of how I feel.
Fantastic. So. Fantastic. And Suki, on that note and your incredible conversation of your own journey of Audalis and Involve and of all the amazing stuff that you are doing for diversity and inclusion at the workplace, thank you so much for speaking to me. And thank you again for all your wonderful thoughts.
You are very welcome. Thank you for having me. And I really appreciate it, Ash. And hopefully see you in London. So if you ever come to London.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.